Pañuelo. Aguantó Luis Suárez, se fue solo. Karim Benzema.
A very good day to you all. Welcome back to Marca's Eye on La Liga podcast, as finally we've thrown off the shackles of the transfer window rumour mill and the international break bedlam, and we're getting back down to La Liga football once again. What a weekend we have just had. A new La Liga leader, a big upset at the Camp Nou as well, and both Madrid sides winning big. And that was just the Saturday afternoon. We'll be catching up on all of the action from the weekend today, looking at some of the unsung heroes from the last few days. And of course, our experts will be giving you their thoughts on the impending Champions League action coming up this week as well. It's all here in the next 40 minutes or so with myself, Ollie Wilson. And I'm delighted to say on the show today, we have two of the finest footballing minds that Marca has to offer. First, and in no particular order, journalist Mark Mayo is joining us today. Mark, how are you doing, mate? Pleasure to speak to you again.
Yeah, well, good. Pleasure to speak to you as per usual, Ollie. And it's nice to have a full weekend of La Liga action to reflect on.
Yeah, there's plenty to talk about, and particularly with the big sides as well. Also joining us on the show today to talk about all of the action is Aldo Sainati, fellow Marca journalist. Aldo, pretty intense weekend. I think you know where we're going to start, and we'll move on to Barcelona later on. But action up and down the table, and the Cinderella story's over for Las Palmas.
Hi, Ali. Yeah, thanks for having me. I think that there's a lot to talk about after the international break. There have been a couple surprises in there, and it always says a lot about the squads. There's injuries, you get questions on squad depth, rotations, and you get a more realistic view of each squad.
Well, don't talk to Luis Enrique about rotation. We'll come into that in just a moment. Here is the news from the last 7 days or so in La Liga. Of course, the big one is Barcelona beaten by Alaves 2-1 on Saturday night as Luis Enrique leaves Suarez, Messi and Iniesta all on the bench to start the game. Real Madrid make it 15 straight victories with a stomping 5-2 win over Osasuna. Zidane equaling the straight victories record of Miguel Muniz's side from 1960-61. Raul, though, the former Los Blancos legend, popping up in New York at the opening of the new FC Barcelona store. Plenty of Los Blancos fans very unhappy about that, but Raul saying he was only working for La Liga. Atletico Madrid finally get going in league action. Griezmann getting a brace in their 4-0 win over Celta Vigo, while Valencia falls short of a heroic fight back down to 10 men, back from 2-0 down against Real Betis before Ruben Castro fires the away side a 91st minute winner. And of course, the news just before all the weekend's action that the transfer ban on Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid is going to be upheld. More appeals coming from the two Madrid giants. But is this Barca's time to strengthen and capitalise, as the two Madrid clubs are deemed a little weak in the transfer market for the next 18 months? Gentlemen, let's start first and foremost, though, with the Barcelona game from Saturday. Davison and Ibai Gomez scoring for Alaves in a superb win at the Camp Nou for the underdogs. Massive underdogs, the newly promoted side, going into this. There are plenty of questions coming out from this game, but I guess the big one is, how does this happen, Mark?
Well, it happens when you underestimate a relatively decent team. We saw Alaves pick up a point at Atletico a couple of weeks ago, and now they've grabbed a win at Barcelona, so precedent says that this is a decent team you're dealing with, and whether they can do that against the lower sides or not is a different matter. But I think that's the main reason that this comes about, is when you think that we can just change a few players and stroll through, but that's not what's happened.
Is it, you say it's underestimating this side, is it Luis Enrique being too overconfident then of, I need to start sorting out a rotation in this side if Barca are going to battle on all four fronts in this season? Does that mean then that he wants to get this early, start sorting out who he can rotate in what positions for the big guys, especially with the international break and the tired legs that the likes of Messi and Suarez had from their travel as well? And he's just perhaps done this too early, too soon in the season against an Alaves side that didn't have as many players out on international duty and were really G'd up to take this Barcelona team on.
Yeah, and they had a lot of their changes were in the attack as well, and it's when you change the vital creative side of the attack, and that's what Barcelona found their game on. Basically, it's all founded around Messi and Iniesta, with Suarez finishing it off. Neymar hadn't played that this season yet. So you changed some pretty vital parts of that team.
Yeah, Mark's absolutely right. There were just far too many rotations, and not just in attack. There was also quite a few in defense. I mean, you had Lucas Digne, Mathieu Mascherano, and Aleix Vidal as that back four, where you could tell that there was a lot of problems in terms of not a lot of time playing together. And I think Luis Enrique realized that he made a mistake and had far too many rotations all at once. So this is something that I'll have to keep in mind going forward. And after the international break, you sort of tend to have to do that, but not as much as not all at once is what he should have realized.
Aldo, they have to start sorting out where they can rotate, because that was almost Barcelona's downfall in the league campaign last season. So it's almost essential that Luis Enrique does do this at some point. It's just the wrong time, and unfortunate that Alaves came in with a really good game plan to try and shut down Barca by playing five at the back.
But it's not just Luis Enrique. I think that there's also... It says a lot about La Masia, so there's only one Masia graduate in there, and I think that also shows a shift in thinking at the Catalan club.
Well, that was touched on actually on Marco in the fallout from the defeat on the weekend, that there was only one, as you say, academy graduate in this Barcelona starting 11. But surely we do have to start thinking that what we've seen come out of La Masia in the last few years, in the last decade, two decades really, if you think about the development of players like Iniesta and Xavi as well, that's a massive stroke of luck in terms of being able to find that talent and pull it all together at the same time, in that way that we talked about last week of football being cyclical. It's something that isn't going to come round too often. Barcelona aren't going to be expected surely to churn out quality youngsters year after year after year that can just step into this Barcelona side that plays at such a high level, because we're seeing at the moment that the players brought in to add depth, as we saw on the weekend, they can't step in straight away and play at that exact same high level without Barcelona needing to perhaps lean on Messi and Suarez and the big players to carry them through.
I think it's a tricky question. It depends on how you look at it. I mean, there's a definite change in the club's mentality, and I think it's not just that these sorts of players aren't good enough. It's also that they haven't been given a chance and they haven't been given the opportunities to become good enough. And it's very difficult because, like you mentioned, these are once-in-a-generation players. But at the same time, I think the model is changing. The way the club operates is sort of using this as an excuse as they turn to the market to plug in positions at the club that they would normally just turn to the academy. And it's hard for a player right now at Barca B to sort of look at the squad and say, okay, I have my chance, and they'll have to go on loan. So, I mean, if you look at like someone like Munir, you think he can do the fourth forward role because he is talented enough. But at the same time, they bring in someone like Alcácer, who right now is slightly better. You know, that shows that there's a different priority.
You say once in a generation, though, and you've kind of stolen what I was going to say, is that once in a generation does kind of mean that you have players like Sergio Roberto who aren't once in a generation, because effectively they're workhorses. And as you say, they can get up and down the right flank and left flank and they can do a job. But you think about the current generation they have isn't as good, is it? Because you have Sergi Samper and Munir have to go out on loan, and I don't remember Iniesta or Xavi Hernandez being anything other than straight into the team as teenagers.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that goes into their success, and whether those loan deals are because they're just not good enough, or is it because there's a different perspective at the club. Samper is an interesting case. Munir is definitely an interesting case, like I mentioned. And I mean, these are obviously talented players. They might not be Xavi's and Iniesta's, but the role that's expected of them is often not as high or not as immediate as they might think from the outset. So I think that, you know, a coach like Enrique has been criticized on this point in the past, and it's something that we should definitely keep an eye on.
Well, it's definitely something worth mentioning, because academy players, you know, the thing is that they come up together. They've played for however many years together already, and as you say, Alcácer, he's a good enough forward for Barcelona, but we could see already that he's not in tune with their style, is he, yet?
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to give him time, but in terms of the lost points over the weekend, you could sort of think that Mounir would be able to fit in better in terms of positioning, in terms of movement. He'll understand a bit better how to play with the current midfield and with Neymar.
That's what you're going to get as well then, gentlemen, when you make seven changes, near wholesale changes, for Luis Enrique. You've got a new man leading the back line between the posts in Cillessen making his debut, and obviously conceding two and losing is never a great way to make your debut. As you say, we've got Turan, Alcacer in there, Denis Suarez as well, players that, as you both have mentioned, aren't used to the Barcelona style of play completely yet. Turan hasn't had the best time settling in since his arrival from Atletico Madrid last season. I mean, to make wholesale changes and to expect it to be comfortable still, even against a side like Alavés, a newly promoted side that have made wholesale changes of their own, are practically a new side going into this season, it's almost naive from Luis Enrique to think that this squad was going to get the job done quite comfortably, because they tried to play that relaxed Barcelona style of we can just pass our way through anybody.
Sure, I mean, there were just too many changes. There's no other way to put it. I mean, I think Mark mentioned that quite clearly. You know, that's definitely part of it. I just wanted to bring in that Masia angle as well, because I think that's something a bit more long term. I mean, like I mentioned, Luis Enrique realizes he made a mistake. He'll have to live with that, but that's a one-time thing and not a huge concern going forward, whereas something like La Masia is a bit more long-term and may have greater implication on how the club is run, how the coach decides things.
I would say quickly that the benefit for Barcelona is that this has come in September as opposed to next March. And if they do it next March when they're in a, you know, it really is deadlock time for a title race, then they could lose the title because of it. Whereas now they have plenty of time to recover, learn from their mistakes, as you say, and then they can push on and have a good undefeated run from here on in.
Very quickly, gents, can we just mention Alavés as well, and Mauricio Pellegrino's his ability to have come into a brand new side, got this massive result with a new side that he's brought in a lot of players, but they're all players that know how to play top flight football at various places around Europe and know what's demanded of a professional. And if you've got that, and if you've got a manager that can instill a system into a squad that is relatively simple and very much relies on hard work, as we saw with the five at the back, you can get results. I mean, it was funny, last week we were mentioning that making wholesale changes and moves late in the transfer window means that you're always going to have a slow start to the season. But Alavés have kind of completely destroyed our argument about that.
Yeah, the change in coach, there's lots of new players, and in a lot of ways it's very unusual for a side that just comes up from Segunda División. And they're, you know, they're very well organized. They play quite well despite that many changes. And there are a couple of interesting players that's always worth keeping an eye on. I mean, there's Marcos Llorente in midfield, who's one for the Madridistas to check out, because he's on loan from Real Madrid. And then there's also Daniel Torres, and I think that they both had a very good game in midfield within that 5-4-1 defensive structure that Barca just couldn't break down. And so I think that we're seeing this team do very well.
Gents, let's move away from Barcelona, although just a final mention quickly on that game of good news, of course, for Kiko Femenia, a former Barcelona B player who never quite broke through, getting his revenge at the club that he claims emotionally ruined him. Quite a strong statement for a football player to make. I'm not too sure if that's too legitimate a comment to make, but Femenia very delighted with the victory. Real Madrid, 5-2 victors against Osasuna. Cristiano Ronaldo back playing for Los Blancos, back on the score sheet. No surprise, Sergio Ramos with a superb header. Modric with a fine strike. Pepe and Danilo both on the score sheet as well. Very comfortable win for Zinedine Zidane's side, but a big win in terms of this record. 15 victories in a row. But I think as well, for me, Mark, that stands out on this one is the 9 different goal scorers that Madrid have had over this 15-game stretch, which shows that Madrid aren't relying on Cristiano Ronaldo to provide the goals anymore, or not as much as they used to, particularly under Zidane since he took over in last season in January.
Yeah, the BBC is one of the most famous things in Madrid at the moment, and it's not as important as it used to be, which is really important when Cristiano Ronaldo has injury problems, Karim Benzema has injury problems, Bale didn't really have that great a game, but then they still scored 5 against Osasuna, so Yeah, you know when you play a Real Madrid team that there's going to be threat all over the pitch, but now there's not so much of a threat all over the pitch from all of the wide areas and down the middle, but from the midfield and the defence as well. And it makes it so hard to just marking at corners. Do you pick up the bloke who's in the D, like a Modric or someone, or do you think about Ramos or Ronaldo? And it's, even if you play like Alaves played, five at the back at Barcelona, how do you play 11 at the back? You can't deal with it almost.
It's great as well to see, because it's the first time we've seen Ronaldo, Morata and Bale leading this line. And I'd love to know both your thoughts on what Morata brought to that front three, because you mentioned Mark, BBC is what everybody was talking about, and not just on the beaches of Rio, as we saw during the Olympics, if anybody's seen that. But the ability to switch Morata in and to not really lose too much, and to provide something a little bit different in that front line as well. We spoke about what he would change from Benzema playing in that centre forward role, but fitting in so nicely with Ronaldo and Bale as well. Great for Zidane to have depth then at that centre forward position if Benzema either goes on a dry spell or, as we've had at the moment, picking up knocks.
Yeah, I think Morata has a sort of deep lying sort of nature to him. He's not like a Benzema physique, and he's got a bit more pace about him, so he can, in that sense, bring the others into play by dropping a bit deeper. And his technique is pretty flawless, his vision is pretty decent as well. The way that he played at Juventus sort of mirrored that as well, in that he was always complimenting those around him, and that he did a really good job complimenting like Paulo Dybala last season. So it's hard, because if you're a lone striker in effect, then people can expect you to score the goals, but because he's a lone striker surrounded by goal scorers, as we just spoke about, then he can bring those into play, and that can be a really useful asset for Zidane.
In terms of Real Madrid then, what clicks generally under Zidane? Because there were a few raised eyebrows when he was given the role back in January, and quite rightly so. Your first managerial job being Real Madrid, that's going to attract plenty of attention, whether you're a former club legend or not. And there was plenty of expectation. He was a man that some thought was about to lose his job had he not had the end of season success that he did last year. But why does this Madrid side click so well under Zidane, as opposed to other managers that have come in and haven't found that chemistry? We've always heard about split dressing rooms at Real Madrid and problems with other managers.
I think a big part of it is actually the mentality. I mean, he's won, the squad's won 15 matches in a row, and you can even say that collectively they can even do more. I mean, this is a squad that hasn't even reached their full potential yet. And I think a lot of it is just his character. You can see that he might come off sometimes as a little bit cold, but he's trusted. He's gained all of their trust. And he's a bit difficult to read sometimes, but I think that the way that they sort of mimic everything that Zidane represents to the club, the history, the figure that he is, I think it goes a long way.
Yeah, I'd have to say that it's authority for me. It's the authority that he's come in and everyone respects him. He's got the dressing room around his little finger, basically. He can just demand that all the players get behind him. And if they say, oh, I'm not going to get behind you, he'll say, guys, I'm Zinedine Zidane. Who are you going to get behind? Rafa Benitez is a small fish compared to someone like Zinedine Zidane in almost every sense. So I think you've got to tame some egos in that Bernabeu dressing room, and he should be, if anyone can, then you'd expect Zidane can be able to look someone like Bale or Ronaldo in the eye and say that, you know, follow me.
Rafa Benitez there, the Spanish waiter serving up the small fish at the Bernabeu. That's what I think some Chelsea fans might say.
Oh, yeah.
In the UK. Talking of Gareth Bale quickly, his former manager Harry Redknapp is saying that he is going to become the best player in the world, perhaps then outdoing Suarez, Messi and Ronaldo, the big three that are always in that debate. Does Bale have that in him? Do you think he's going to show that to us this season? He's always been up there, just outside that kind of top three mark of the three big boys in world football. Are we seeing him grow more and more at Madrid, and do you think that progression will continue?
He's been doing that all 2016. I think he's had a brilliant run of form for the past 6, 7, 8 months. And, you know, he's had a great Euro campaign. He really helped Madrid push late in La Liga last season, and his influence is growing. I think he'll become the focal point these next few years as Ronaldo ages, and he's going to be the main guy. So I think, yeah, for sure, he's definitely one to keep an eye on because he's already shown that he's within the top three of the world.
All right, gents, we are going to take a very quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit of Celta Vigo against Atletico Madrid, because that was a big win for the other's team, of course, down in the south of the city. And we're going to have a look as well at the transfer ban that has been imposed on Atletico and Real Madrid and decide if it's going to have any impact at all on Barcelona, the title race and their fortunes when we come back here on Eye on La Liga. All right, gents, welcome back to Eye on La Liga. I hope you guys have still stuck with me for this one. We're ploughing through all of the footballing news from the last couple of days or so here on the show. And a massive win on Saturday as well for Atletico Madrid after Griezmann's comments about this Atletico side looking like they were more relegation candidates than anything else. For Celta Vigo, it's a side that are going to have a very busy schedule in the early part of the season with Europa League football as well, and that's coming up on Thursday for them. Haven't got a point yet in this campaign, haven't got it right yet in this campaign, and they were destroyed by Madrid, particularly on the flanks when I was watching this game. No cover for the fullbacks, no support for the fullbacks, and they were getting left for dead by the Atletico Madrid wingers, and they had a field day, Griezmann and co.
Yeah, Griezmann's the main guy there. I think his assist changes the whole game, and then eventually he'll score that brace, but he's the one that they turn to, that they rely on, and he's the one that sort of started that whole great second half that Atleti had. Like you mentioned, it's from the wing, but he can get into a lot of different positions, and I think that Atleti sort of needed that, because it's not only a win, but it's an emphatic win, you know, 4-0 at Balaidos. So, you know, they definitely needed that.
Mark, it's a dominant performance that Simeone was wanting, and interesting that he played a team of 11 that he knew very well from last season, didn't have any of the new boys in. And as we spoke about earlier on with Barcelona making numerous changes, Simeone going back to what he knows can get the job done. Do you think that was a point he was trying to make, or was that just a case of it all clicked right out of the international break and it was a needed win that was always going to come for Atletico at this point in the season, really?
Yeah, he kind of just reset the team, didn't he? He said, all of you who have come in, this is how you do it. Just show we get Griezmann in the middle, we play the ball around, exploit the opposition, and it works. And the international break was important in that, because as much as it's always good to build momentum, but if you've got a lack of momentum and you go to a place like Celta Vigo, that can be quite difficult. It wasn't difficult this time, but it can be. Then it's important to, you know, pull together and show everyone how it's done. And it's typical Griezmann to arrive on a couple of headers. It's not something that many people particularly think he's that good at, or if they notice that he's that good at them. And it was a good all-round performance that isn't necessarily typical of how they usually win games. Not many people would predict a 4-0 win away at Celta Vigo.
What happens now for Celta? Because Eduardo Berizzo's side haven't got anything right in the early part of the campaign. I think there would have been plenty who were hoping, much like some of the others that were caught up in the bottom of the table early on, that coming out of the international break there would be a change. And if anything, for me, it seemed even more disjointed at the back. Alvarez in the post didn't seem to have any control over his back four. The fullbacks, as I say, were left isolated. And that front three didn't create really anything to test Oblak between the posts.
Yeah, I mean, they were really missing Orellana, in addition to those defensive frailties that you mentioned. I think a lot of it comes down to the manager, Eduardo Toto Berizzo. He takes a lot of risks. He's sort of like Marcelo Bielsa in that sense, manager he really looks up to. But they press individually, and when that goes wrong, sort of like we saw here, it does so really badly, and so they can get really outplayed. And you're sort of seeing just this really bad dynamic at the club. And I don't think that Celta was bad the entire game, but they kind of just fell apart, and Atleti really took advantage.
You say they're missing Orellana. They're also missing Nolito very badly. They didn't manage to replace him, and they, you know, when you take out someone of that class, then they're going to struggle. And it's interesting that they're going to have to deal with Europe as well. A lot of teams can do Europe really well and their domestic campaign really badly. They're going to have to hope that they're almost the opposite in that sense, or they're going to be in the bottom five or bottom six this year.
It's funny, gents, when we see those big transfers of key men leaving clubs, moving elsewhere, a side that perhaps isn't in that world-class bracket loses an extraordinary talent and a real linchpin. You can't replace them. So can teams like Celta Vigo afford to lose these players like Nolito? Do they have to put up more of a fight to ensure that the player stays, even if it's chucking more money than necessary at their wage packet, just to ensure that they stay at the club and can try and build a team around this sort of player? Because we see it time and time again that a club will lose a key player and capitulate almost, because suddenly the player who the majority of their play flows through and is created by is gone, and you can't replace that with maybe three or four additions of averageness.
Sadly, I think Nolito, their hands were tied for Celta because it was a release clause that Man City could just drop in. They pay what was for them a pretty minor amount, no matter how much cash Celta said they were going to put in Nolito's contract, he was off. So in that sense, their hands are tied. For other clubs, a lot of teams you see have much bigger release clauses put into their early talents very early on. Maybe they missed the trick in that sense. But I agree with you that you can't just sell one good player and replace them with three potentially good players. You really do need to have the confidence in yourself to go and buy a good player. And perhaps they needed to spend all of that Nolito money plus a little bit more.
Is this then a Celta Vigo side that we're looking at that's going to be, as we say, got Europa League football coming up in the next few weeks, and at least the schedule gets slightly easier for them, because first three games facing Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid, very tough indeed, but away at Osasuna and away at Espanyol, games that they can get points from, Sporting Gijon in between those two at home as well, which is a game that again some would expect at least a result of some sort for. Is this Celta Vigo side actually in trouble?
I don't think they're in too much trouble, at least not yet. They've had a few very, very difficult first fixtures. And I think they have enough quality overall to ensure mid-table, even without Nolito. I mean, I guess it just depends on what you mean by trouble. I don't think they'll be able to replicate the top six or top eight finish, but relegation does seem like a stretch to me. I think that they'll be okay once they get going.
Be interesting to see what happens with the starting 11 to face Standard Liège in the Europa League on Thursday away in Belgium. Celta Vigo, Atletico Madrid, as we said, big win for them. Bad news for them going into the weekend, though, along with Real Madrid, the transfer ban being upheld. It's going to be appealed. It's expected that it'll take a maximum of 3 months to deal with any sort of appeal process from Real Madrid and from Atletico Madrid in the Court of Sporting Arbitration. Gents, it doesn't look like it's going to be overturned in any way, shape or form, this transfer ban. 18 months for these two sides, no incomings or outgoings. Players can be signed, but they can't be registered to play for the teams until January 2018. Is this going to be detrimental to Madrid and Atletico? Is this an opportunity now for Barcelona to really make a big statement in the transfer market? Or is this a Barca side that can't afford to because they're paying such extraordinary wages for the likes of Suarez, Neymar, Messi still?
I think Barcelona could benefit from it. But if you look back to history, when Barcelona had their transfer ban, they lost one title to Atletico, then they won the next one. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to fall behind too much.
But I agree, Mark. I think that Atleti and Real have prepared for it. You know, these are super clubs. This wasn't a decision that surprised them in any way. They were expecting it. And I think Atleti strengthened really well. Real deciding not to strengthen as much was something they did consciously. That was something that Zidane realized that.
Yeah, I think Zidane in particular has said that he's got a great squad, knows he's got depth in it that we've already seen already this season. He's been able to make numerous changes to the starting 11, and it's not really missed a beat yet so far. So hopefully Atletico and Real Madrid will be able to continue their European and La Liga title exploits with this ban hanging over them. We'll just wrap up the La Liga weekend with ask both of you to give me a unsung hero, if you will, for the weekend. I know exactly who I'm picking for it, but I'd like to hear first exactly who you guys have got as your unsung heroes from around La Liga.
I probably should, because I kind of have two, or it was almost two. It was almost two until Mantovani, the Leganés defender, completely scuffed a clearance in the first half of their game with Sporting Gijón, because he's been kind of everywhere this season. He's 32 years old. It's his first season in the La Liga, win in Leganés' first season. And until he scuffed that moment, they hadn't had any goals conceded this year. Sadly, because he did scuff it, I'm going to have to give it to Antonio Adán in the Real Betis goal, because when Valencia were back to 2-2 with about 5-10 minutes to go, he made about 3 or 4 decent saves that certainly helped them win that game.
Yeah, that was an incredible game, wasn't it, with Real Betis 2-0 up after 54 minutes and Valencia down a man as well after Perez is sending off, and then Rodrigo and Garay pulling them back with about 15 minutes to go, 2-2, and then Ruben Castro with the 91st minute winner. It just gets worse and worse for Paco Ayestar inside, doesn't it? What about you, Aldo?
Well, I mean, if Mark gets two answers, I'm going to get two answers as well. I'm going to go with Roque Mesa, the defensive midfielder for Las Palmas. And I think he had a really great game. He kind of showed why Sevilla were so interested in him in the first place and a lot of ways what they were missing. And then the other one that I think is a really interesting player right now is Marc Roca, who's a midfielder at Espanyol. And he's 19 years old, right out of the Espanyol Academy. And he's really helping shore up the midfield and defensive positions. I mean, Kike Sanchez Flores has really struggled in terms of conceding far too many goals. And Marc Roca has been able to take that midfield position, which then allows a player like Victor Sanchez to go to left back as an auxiliary left back and sort of keep that defense afloat. So I think that he's been a really important player and it might do very interesting things.
I think you say about Hero, I think the villain of the week is definitely going to be, and certainly in the Canary Islands, is going to be considered to be the referee who gave the penalty with about five minutes to go in the Sevilla Las Palmas. I was very unsure that that was a penalty, and I think there'll be large parts of the African coast that are very unhappy with that being a penalty as well.
Well, I think everybody that was hoping for that Cinderella Las Palmas story is going to be completely devastated by that result. Let's run through the results from last weekend very quickly then. Sociedad 1-0 against Espanyol on Friday. Atletico Madrid the 4-0 win over Celta Vigo on the road. Real Madrid 5-2 winners at Osasuna. Sevilla 2-1 winners against Las Palmas. Malaga 2-0 loss against Villarreal on home soil. Barcelona 2-1 loss against Alaves. Sporting Gijón on Sunday 2-1 win against Leganés. Valencia losing 3-2 to Real Betis. Granada losing 2-1 to Eibar. And Deportivo La Coruña losing 1-0 to Athletic Club Bilbao. Gentlemen, as I say, it's the European fixtures coming up this week in the Champions League. Sevilla got a really tough test to kick things off against Juventus. For me, it's the pick of the ties in terms of the ties involving the Spanish players and Spanish sides, and probably the pick of all the ties over this first week of Champions League football. Atletico Madrid take on PSV, which will be very difficult for them indeed. Barcelona host Celtic, and of course Real Madrid hosting Sporting Lisbon. Sevilla, baptism of fire against Juventus then.
Yeah, Sampaoli, he's off to a good start in the league. He's up there in terms of the table. I think Nasri had a good enough debut and things are finally starting to click. But, you know, they have a very tough opponent in Juventus. And even though Sampaoli's ideas are being implemented, it's not there yet.
What happens, Mark, with the approach of going into Champions League football, taking on a big boy but not really used to being here? Obviously, great success in the Europa League for the last few years for Sevilla. So they know how to play in Europe and how to get results, but against this sort of calibre of a side, perhaps, it's going to be a bit different.
Yeah, I think the first game is going to be really about confidence, because if they can get past it with a point or not a hammering, then they're in a good position to take on the other sides in that group, which you would pretty much say they're better than, subjectively. And if they can just get past this game unscathed, don't have anyone sent off, don't concede 4 goals or anything stupid, then that's the perfect start in relative sense.
Where will your eyes be flocking, gentlemen, for these games? Obviously, 2-on-2, 2 Tuesday, 2 Wednesday. Barcelona against Celtic on the Tuesday night, or PSV against Atletico Madrid, Aldo?
I'm probably going to watch both. Maybe one, then the other.
You footballing whore, you'll just take it all, won't you?
Double screening. I kind of worry that PSV Atleti has 0-0 written all over it.
Again.
Barcelona, you wouldn't want to be Celtic playing a Barcelona team that's angry, which could well be the case. Although
come on, Celtic got that big 5-1 win in the Old Firm derby. Yeah, Musa with the hat trick. Surely they're going to be riding high after a big victory against the rivals. Could be tougher perhaps than Barcelona think, or are you just not seeing that one at all? No chance for Celtic in the Camp Nou.
I'll never say no chance because that's when they win. But I would think that beating any Scottish team 5-1 is not going to really prepare you enough for playing Barcelona.
I think we're going to have plenty of Scottish football fans getting very frustrated with you indeed, Mark. Real Madrid against Sporting Lisbon as well. Sporting can be a tough test, but that Portuguese top flight is just not the same as taking on a Real Madrid side that two Champions League victories in the last 3 years. I mean, they're good in Europe. They're always good in Europe. We know how good they are in Europe, and they're good to start this season as well.
Yeah, Real are going to... They should walk this, really, first game.
Confident. Far more confident than Barcelona against Celtic, it almost sounds there, Mark, I've got to say. Gents, all the European football coming our way this week should be fantastic indeed, and you guys have been fantastic for joining us on the show today. Really appreciate it, gents. Always top to chat a bit of Spanish football with you guys.
Thanks, Ollie.
Thanks, man.
Cheers, gents. That is us for the week, done and dusted. In 7 days' time, we'll be back with plenty more La Liga news and views and opinion. Plenty of games coming your way on the weekend as well. Betis against Granada kick things off on Friday. Leganes against Barcelona, tough one. And Barca perhaps looking to bite back after their loss this weekend on Saturday, along with Atletico Madrid hosting Sporting Gijón, Eibar against Sevilla, Las Palmas against Malaga, all on the Saturday and Sunday, Osasuna against Celta Vigo, Athletic Club against Valencia, Villarreal against Real Sociedad, and Espanyol against Real Madrid, ending it on Sunday night. Remember to get onto Twitter @MarcaInEnglish to keep up to date with all of the sporting news from Spanish football. Get onto Marca.com as well, of course, where you can find Aldo and Mark and their journalistic musings, if you will. And remember to subscribe to us on iTunes also, so you can get us once a week, every 7 days, with all of your Spanish football discussion. Until then, have a very good week indeed. The Champions League is back, and our eyes are going to be glued to the double screening that's going to be going on this week. Have a good one.